Welcome to the Sarah Centrella Show. Join best-selling author, master life coach, and manifesting expert Sarah Centrella as she shares tips, tools, and inspiring interviews to help you create your dream life. It's time to hustle and thrive. Now, here's your host, Sarah Centrella.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. We are going to be getting all in it. We're going to hustle and thrive today. I am super excited for the conversation that we're about to have because I love this lady. Today's guest, Diane Valentine, is someone that I am lucky enough to call a friend, but I can't wait for us to talk about kind of how we connected and how we met because it really is tying into some of the other conversations that I've been having on the show. And we're going to get all into that. But before I do, you guys, she is a total powerhouse. Diane is a TV host and personality. She was the host of the Bravo series, To Realm for Love. She's a sought-after keynote speaker, a best-selling author. She's a love expert. And wedding designer to the stars, and the list goes on, entrepreneur. So we are going to mine her mind today for all kinds of amazing wisdom. Diane, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I think I need to take you everywhere I go for that kind of introduction, just so you know.
Girl, I'm walking around like bowing to you. So shall I tell everybody how we connected? Because I think it's one of those things that a lot of people let fear stop them.
Yes. Yeah.
Here's my thing. Okay, so there's one thing that I love probably more than anything else in the whole wide world, and it's Italy. So, of course, when Bravo announced that they were doing your show, and I didn't know you then, you and I had not connected then, but I was like, oh, my God. There's a show in Italy and it's about love, So mm-hmm. Of course, binged it like a crazy fan. And then I had this insane idea because manifesting usually comes in the form of an idea, but most people don't pay attention.
Yeah.
And I was like, whatever, what's it going to hurt? So I stalk you, as I'm prone to do. And I reach out and I was like, Diane, you're never going to see this, but if you do, I have a women's empowerment dinner. I'm super girl fan geeking out on you right now and off chance, any way you could come. And I was literally sock blown when you responded. And then above all, you were there and you rocked the house and we all fell in love with you. And I was like, this is going to be my new girlfriend. Like, we're going to be friends. I'm going to make this happen. So I know you probably thought I was nuts, though, but thank you so much for showing up in my life. And I cannot wait for everyone to be as obsessed.
Well, I'm so glad you shared that story because I just want to add that so many times, like you were saying, how fear stops people in their tracks. And so many times I meet people that don't do what you did. And they say, oh, my God, I've been a fan or I've always wanted to call you. Or I wanted to reach out and I didn't know what to say and I didn't know what to ask. And I'd just be like, well, why didn't you just pick up the phone? Like, many mm-hmm. days I'm answering my own phone in my office. Like, why you just didn't send me an email? So I think that's why one of the reasons I know I felt connected to you and drawn to you because you are fearless. You operate your life in the same space that I do. And
yeah,
it just proved
go after it.
Because you may have thought, wow, it would be great to have Diane Valentine here with us at our empowerment dinner. And at the same time, I'm always like, how can I connect with more women? How can I meet more women? How can I meet more diverse women in different industries and not just my own? So I hope I was a blessing to you, but you have to know how much of a blessing
Absolutely.
You were to me.
Absolutely. And I think that is such an amazing thing that is happening in maybe even the last 5 years, maybe since Me Too, where women are really so much more open and receptive, I feel like, than we were 10 years ago to each other. And the love that you showed by showing up for me, who's a total stranger, And continuing to, you know, we spoke together at the WAGS event about a year ago, and got an opportunity to hang out and have drinks and catch up. And my thing is always I want to bring value, but I also just love learning, you know, and you have done so many incredible things. Can you kind of take us back to before all of these amazing things have happened, and tell us kind of what your, you know, where did these dreams come from for you, and where did your initial hustle come from?
Wow. That's a loaded question, but...
Right. Where'd you start, Diane? That's what I want to know. Tell us to start.
is a couple of things. You know, one, a major milestone in my life, a monumental turning point, was the summer of 1977. The summer of 1977 is when my parents got a divorce. And so everything that I thought love meant and looked like was shattered in my world. It was turned upside down. And in the summer of 1977 is when I really fell in love with love, because I was just on this relentless pursuit to find it, for myself, to be around it, to, you know, to see what real love looked like, to see if love even really existed, because, you know, my family is everything to me. And to watch how divorce just crumbled our family life was just devastating for me, even at 7 years old. And it really changed my life. And ever since the age of seven, I've been in love with love. And then two, another characteristic, my father was a perfectionist. He was a general contractor. He was a builder. He worked with such precision, and he had such honor in excellence. It was what he stood for. It was what he believed in. And, you know, in turn, it's become what I believe in. You know, I believe in excellence. I believe in showing up and doing and being your best. You know, I believe that if I show up half-assed at any point, not only am I cheating whoever's on the other side of that, the recipient of Diane, 50% of Diane, I'm also cheating myself. So no matter where I'm at or what I'm doing, I try to show up at 100% and in excellence at all times. And how do I manage that, knowing that I have so many different businesses and ventures and things that I have, you know, stepped into, is because it's been a real lesson in being present. So I have a lot of responsibilities. I have multiple businesses. I have clients. I have a daughter. I have grandchildren. I have all these things that take up my time. But I try to be laser focused with whatever I'm working on. You know what I mean? So whatever I'm doing in that moment or in that day, that is all I have, is that moment right there. And so I try to be fully present. Like even you and I are talking now, and I'm sitting here with my eyes closed. And the reason my eyes are closed is so that I can make sure that I'm focused and I'm not allowing my email to distract me, or my cell phone, or, you know, people that are walking through my house as I'm sitting here working in my pajamas.
Yeah, exactly. And I think so many people don't do that. Like maybe they're taking on more than they can manage, or are not able to kind of say no to opportunities that aren't exactly in line in what they do. And just even in your intro, you've really tackled some huge, huge probably dreams that you had initially had and do have a lot on your plate, as you mentioned. So how do you kind of decide what is calling you and make those decisions so that you know you can show up as your best self for each of these ventures?
I, you know, every decision I make and every venture I take on or anything I say yes to, I'm always led by my heart. So I believe that my ministry is love, always has been, always will be. And so it is things that pull at my heart that make me say yes to them. And they might not make sense, and in some cases they haven't made good financial sense. But when they pull at my heart, I know that it is something that I'm supposed to do, or at least something I'm supposed to focus on, at least for this moment in time.
I love that, because it goes back to our intuition, right? Like listening to ourselves, because it will always kind of guide us in the right direction if we have the courage.
It always will. It always will. And I also think that when you don't, I don't want to say when you don't believe in yourself, but when you don't know how to hear that voice, it can be very challenging, particularly for women, because we try to be everything for everybody, and we forget that you can't be anything to anybody unless you are first everything to yourself.
Hell yes. Hell yes. So I think that's really interesting that that you mentioned that, because for me, I didn't probably listen to my intuition until kind of my rock bottom moment. That was like when my intuition smacked me upside the head and was like, okay, pay attention. And then ever since then, like the last decade or so, I've really been trying to follow it, because I can just see how it's always has my best interest at heart. I never regret decisions made by it. Is that something that you feel has been kind of innate in you throughout your life, or has it been kind of a practice to be able to hear that and follow it?
You know, I do think that it's a quality that's been pretty much innate inside of who I am. But I'll explain, because I'm certainly no psychic, right? But I think that I've always been a little bit selfish. And people hear the word selfish, and to them, that's a bad word. Like,
right.
Oh, my God, that's horrible. What do you mean you're selfish? What about others? What about your family? What about your kids? What about your husband? You know, and, you know, I'm just a really, really firm believer that I can't make anybody else happy until I first make myself 100% happy. And so if I follow my heart, if I follow my gut, I know that that is going to lead to happiness and joy for me. And once I have found it for myself, it's so easy for it to emanate and ricochet off everybody in my life. When I'm happy, my husband is happier. When I'm happy, my daughter is happier. When I'm happy and full of joy, my grandkids are full of joy and happiness, because it's contagious. But when I'm sad and when I'm depressed,
yeah,
you know, I'm down. And then my husband is quiet. And then my daughter's like, what's wrong, Mom? What's going on with you? You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so,
well, you were on the cutting edge.
So being selfish is really a powerful, powerful tool for women. And it allows us to really change the world by that simple principle.
Yeah, love ourselves. Love ourselves. Like find whatever it is that helps you to nurture that, and act from that place, that space. So as an entrepreneur, I know you have an amazing new business, and I'd love to talk about that. But let's kind of talk about when you started that journey, and you started in design, right? Designing mm-hmm. weddings, designing weddings for stars, mm-hmm. designing homes, things like that. How did you take action on that vision or that desire or that dream to create something like that for yourself? And then what was that hustle like when you were building it? Because I know we have a lot of entrepreneurs on here mm-hmm. who are maybe starting businesses during COVID, right? Because now they have the time to put mm-hmm. put a business plan together for the first time, and they want to follow a
right.
dream like that. What was it like for you starting out?
You know, my journey was a little different, because I was 17 years old. I was a senior in high school when I started my business. So I had no responsibilities. You know, I was still living at home with my dad, and I had no responsibilities. And I've always been fearless, but I had nothing to lose. Because when you have nothing, you don't worry about losing anything. You just go for it. I remember I started my business in my dad's garage. I went to Kinko's and made some business cards, the little cheap ones, the little flimsy ones that with the perforated edges. And I just started networking, and I started telling people that I was a designer and I was a wedding designer and I was going to do this and I was going to do that. And at the time, that was not a career at all. It was not something that you could even identify as a career. And so people were like, oh, okay, that's cool. Well, can you help me? I'm getting married, or can you help me plan my wedding, all of that. And then as it began to grow, I would tell people, I'm a wedding designer. And then people started laughing at me, like, oh, that's real cute. Oh, so you put little parties together, huh? Bless your little heart, you know, like, but what's your real job? You know, what are you going to do when you grow up, you know? And hearing people like that, hearing people not only insult me but really doubt me to my face gave me more drive, I think, than even my father instilled in me, because there's a part of me, you know, that wants to prove people wrong. If you say something negative about me, then I'm going to find a way to make you not right about what you think of me. So because people mocked me, it actually gave me more fuel and more determination to do what had never been done.
I'm exactly the same way, girl. I always turn that, I call them like haters, into my fire. There almost is no better fire when you're starting out to be like,
yeah,
great, I'm going to prove you wrong whether you're still watching me by then or not.
Right.
I know, right? Like, I know. You may have given up on me by the time I hit it, but I'm going to hit it at some point.
Yeah.
And so you did. You created it. It has obviously, you know, grown. You've worked with many celebrities and stars. And I'm guessing that your love really transitioned into your career as a love expert. I mean, you've been on... You were Steve Harvey's kind of go-to for love experts and To Run for Love and things like that. You have an amazing book about it. Talk to us about the love piece. I'm single. Feel free to drop all your pearls, girl.
Well, you did. You know, working with women in love, you know, for so many years, I just, you know, you begin to learn a thing or two about love and about relationships and watching how women sometimes make good decisions but often make really bad decisions when it came to love, particularly because I work for people that are very wealthy or that marry into wealth. And I was just so many women that I thought, this guy is the biggest jerk I have ever met. What on earth could make her want to marry him? And everything kind of led me back to the dollar signs behind his name. And I just began to realize that women are looking for all of the wrong things, not all, but the majority of the wrong things when it comes to love. So to be a little more specific, people talk a lot about chemistry. And they say, Diane, I have to have chemistry when I meet a guy. I got to have chemistry. If I don't have any chemistry, I don't even want to be bothered. I'm not even going to go on a date. I'm not interested. And I say that is the biggest mistake that a woman can make, because building a lasting, loving relationship is more about compatibility than it is about chemistry. Because chemistry is the equivalent of lust. It's the equivalent of eating a box of chocolates and your endorphins go crazy and you feel like you're on a high, right?
But then you can forget it.
Eventually,
you can forget it later.
The high goes away and now you're just left with extra pounds you didn't want in the first place, right? And so women make those same mistakes when it comes to love. They ignore the men they are more compatible with. Okay, so he might not be the best dresser, but he's really financially sound, right? He might not have any cool points, right? He might not have cool points because he might be too short. But guess what? He might love his mother, and he might, you know, spend his time volunteering, helping underprivileged kids, and it shows that he has a great heart. So there might not be any chemistry, but I think if you take the time to get to know people and allow them to get to know you, you might find that you're more compatible with people that you would normally just disregard.
And can you build chemistry over time? Have you
Of course.
Seeing couples be able to really
Of course. I use my husband and I as a perfect example for this, because my husband and I were friends for 8 years. Just friends. I wasn't interested in him. He was not interested in me. We were just really good friends, and we worked together. And then after 8 years, I started looking at him in a different light, because I was like, wow, he's such a good guy. You know, he's such a nice guy. He has such a good heart. Like, wow, he really loves his mother, like all of these qualities. And then I started praying, and I would be like, Lord, well, could you just send me a guy like Damon? Could you just send me somebody like him?
Hello.
Yeah, like, okay, he's my friend. I know he's not my husband, but could you just send me somebody like him, you know, that loves his mother, that's kind, that's gentle, that's funny.
And God's like, what would you like? Would you like me to gift wrap him? Because I sent him there 8 years ago.
Exactly. But so, to me, that is the perfect example that we did not have chemistry, you know, at all. We were just friends, and it wasn't neither of us were in a place in our lives where we were looking for the other person, right? But
so
in the
beautiful.
End, we were so compatible, you know. And then I tell people, when somebody is kind to you, I use a phrase all the time with the women that I work with, and I say that sometimes you have to learn to love who loves you. And what I mean by that is that when someone is kind to you, when someone is thoughtful, when somebody cares about your children that he did not father, it is easy to love somebody with those kind of qualities.
Absolutely.
It is easy.
And you love yourself even, you know, you learn to love yourself too because you're respecting that love and you're receiving that love. Do you think in your work with women that they can – I say this as maybe somebody who has done this in the past, who has really kind of put up those walls of like, no, I can do it. I can do everything on my own. I'm an independent power woman, you know, all of that stuff in a way that makes you pretty kind of unreceptive to love.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What I work with you about that.
I think just about every woman that I've worked with in dating internationally has come with that kind of perspective, right? That, you know, I really don't need anybody. I just want somebody. And I'm like, okay, well, let's start changing your language. Because if you didn't anybody, you would not have called me.
Yes.
We all need somebody. We all need love. And love is, I mean, money and success is not a substitute for love on any street in America. You can preach it all you want. But I know the truth. I know that men and women were created to be in intimate, loving relationships with one another. And when we are not in intimate, loving relationships, there is an imbalance in the very DNA of who we are as human beings.
Yeah, I believe it because it's a totally different level of happiness, of calm, of peace when you're in, you know, a trusting, mutually loving, respecting relationship that nothing else kind of takes you to. And I think the ease, because, you know, as a woman who's out here, I've been a single mom now for, God, going on 12 years, and that, quite honestly, has been an intentional thing. I love raising my kids alone, but I also am prepping myself to manifest that amazing relationship. As soon as they go off to college, you got like 5 years left. No clock or anything on that. But I know that I needed to do some of, you know, that deep internal work to be ready so that I'm not repelling, let's say, and I am receptive, you know, to that. What are some things that maybe we could do as women if we recognize that in ourselves, that we kind of are that charge ahead to be a little bit more receptive to love?
Yeah, good, great question. I mean, it starts really simple tactics. Make a list. What do you want? What do you want and what do you not want? Simple list. And then you start with another list. What are the characteristics that you are looking for in a man? And if your top five characteristics have anything to do with appearance or finances, you know you need to do some soul searching.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
For
sure. People, so part of a future board is there's five different categories, and one of the categories that I make everyone define what it is they want is relationships. And so if they want to manifest a, you know, the love of their life type thing, the pictures that I have them search for are what does love look like to them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what are acts of love in a picture? How can you show what maybe loyalty means or some of those other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is that a good way to kind of begin looking at it and looking for it, where we're imagining what that relationship feels like and how we feel in the relationship?
For sure, for sure. I think seeing it, manifesting it through boards and, you know, all of that is very important and powerful. But where I start with my clients is I start even before that step. So we start by looking in the mirror. If you say you want to be a wife, then what does a wife look like to you? And are you displaying the qualities that you think a wife is supposed to be? Are you the marrying kind? I mean, are you willing to compromise? Because independent, successful women, that is a bad word to them, compromise. That is a bad word.
That is a dirty word.
It is a dirty word. And I say it all the time. I am very powerful. I'm very strong. I'm very independent. But on no given day am I any of those things without my husband.
Wow.
There's no way that I'm any of those things without him right by my side. So if anything that I'm doing, if there's any characteristics in me that are not fully supporting him and who he is in our partnership, then I need to look at those qualities within myself, because I'm not willing to do the rest of this life without him.
Wow, that's amazing. And those are the types of relationships a single woman want to manifest. Like, you want a partner who gives kind of like that support and equal respect.
You know,
that you're both there and you're both supporting each other. And I think a lot of women, I would guess, you know, probably me in that bucket too, are afraid to maybe lose themselves. You know, if I get into relationships, does that mean it's going to stop me from being successful? Is it going to, am I going to lose my identity? What do you say to help us get through that,
know,
or get over that?
I really think that is an excuse. That's an excuse that women have created, you know what I mean? And we use that as our security blanket. And really, the only thing that often stands in the way in women finding loving, meaningful relationships is fear.
Yeah.
Because we are afraid to love. We enter into relationships, we enter into first dates, and we say, okay, I'll do this if he does this. We enter into relationships and say, I'll tell him I love him only if he tells me he loves me. I'm not going to say it first. I'll buy him dinner, but only after he's bought me 5 dinners. We do all things like that. Everything comes with a condition. And I try to teach the women that I work with, if you want to be loved, that means you have to love, period. That means you have to put it all on the table. You have to risk looking stupid, being wrong, being embarrassed, and ultimately getting your heart broke if you really want to find love. Now, I am not saying that you should give your heart to the first fool that, you know, that has called
you
in the last 10 years.
Intuition.
Right. So I'm not saying you should throw all your discernment out the window. But I am saying is, if you meet a guy and he seems like a nice guy and he looks good on paper and all of these things, he has great integrity and, you know, displays the characteristics that you say you're looking for in a mate, and then you enter into maybe it's not even a relationship with, but this period of exploration, you have to be willing to give everything. You have to be willing to give your heart. You have to be willing to give up money. You have to be willing to give up time. You have to be willing to give up everything to find love. And then guess what? If he's not the one, when you walk away from that relationship, however length of time it took, you will know that you gave everything you could to make it work. So if it doesn't work, it's not because you held back in any way.
Right, because there is no other way to fall in love. So
no,
fall, right?
There is no other way.
Otherwise, you're just going to be always, it will feel like that relationship that's like 70% on both sides.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't want one of those.
Steve Harvey and I used to debate this issue all the time on his show, because he's like, Diane, you got to let a man be a man. You got to let a man be a man. You can't pay for dates. You can't do this. You can't do that. And I used to be like, Steve, I get what you're saying, but I don't value money that much. I've made a lot of it. I'm going to make a lot more. If I like a guy and I invite him to dinner and I pay for it, what is the big deal? Because I am this strong, independent woman. And if
right.
he can't handle that, if he couldn't
he
handle
yeah.
me buying a meal, then that's a sign for me that he's not the
yep.
man for me.
Yep, such good advice. Oh, my God.
You know, because those chauvinistic qualities, they don't really work for a new modern-day woman. We make our own money.
True.
We build our own lives. We create our own futures. And guess what? We can create our own love affairs the way we want them.
Amen. I'm so about that. I'm so about, like, defining what it is that you want. And once you do, also, like, noticing what's holding you back, you know, like what we've been talking about. I think there definitely are things that if we don't pay attention to them and if we don't look at some of the patterns we've created in the past, then we, you know, can probably continue to recreate them until we decide, like, no, this is who I want, and I know I'm sending out a new signal, which means that I have to trust that who I'm manifesting in the future is going to be different because I am intentionally being different.
Absolutely.
And
you
I can
know,
kind of the, change those.
The women that I work with that date internationally, you know, the excursions that I take them on are, you know, are private, bespoke, luxury excursions. So they're very pricey. On average, they tend to be about $100,000, you know. And the biggest, probably the biggest question I get from women that I work with is, Diane, I don't want to go over there and just take care of somebody. You know, I don't want somebody
yeah.
to just want me for my money. And, you know, what I try to explain to them is like, look, I would never say women should subscribe to adult adoption. That is not what I'm saying.
Yes,
that is not what
yes.
I'm saying, right? I'm not saying go to Italy or Rome or anywhere else and adopt an Italian man.
Hell no.
Right. That don't work on any block in America. But what I am saying is if you can find a man that has great qualities and he is able to take care of himself, now, he might
yeah.
not be able to give you the lifestyle that you have achieved and you want to maintain. Maybe he's not there yet, or maybe he doesn't desire to have that. But if
right.
he can take care of himself, and if he's demonstrated to take that he is capable and smart and able to take care of himself, why
yeah.
would you let money stand in the way of that? Especially if you have an abundance of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and as long as he's not looking for you to be his ride out, then
exactly,
then
I'm
you
like,
can actually fall in love.
Yeah,
know?
They're like, Diane, but these flights, you know, to Europe are expensive. I'm like, girl, they are not more expensive than all those Birkin bags in your closet. What are you talking about?
Exactly. And, Diane, I just got to say, you know that on my future board is a nice Italian man, my five-year plan. So you know who I'm going to be calling in 5 years.
Oh, yes.
Let's go to Italy. Find me that guy.
Oh, yes.
I love it. So that leads us into, can we chat a little bit about, I want to talk about a lot of things because I know that whenever we are going big, right, and showing up and following our dreams and we have that ambition, big opportunities come by, exciting opportunities come by, and then things change. We have to pivot, right? We're all
yes.
pivoting now thanks to lovely Corona.
Yes.
But can we talk about the show? I know that was an exciting time for you. It's something you had been doing for a long time. Like you said, you've been taking women on these excursions.
Uh-huh.
And what is it like to kind of have the moment where things have come together and you're really living a dream? And you and I talked about this a little bit when we had drinks last
uh-huh.
time. And then things still pivot. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
And a lot of people can relate to it, you know, when you're really working so hard and
yeah.
get what you want.
Yeah. You know, I'll kind of take you through the phases that I went through, particularly with that show. The show was developed, and it was developed around me. So it was developed with me in mind to host it. It was sold with me as a host and all of that. And when it was, you know, sold, it was probably one of the happiest days of my life. It was my
yeah.
absolute dream job. I was working in a country that I loved, and I spent so much time in the country. I know it well. I have a strong affinity towards the culture. I was on television. I was shooting the show. I was doing exactly what I love, doing exactly where I wanted to be right? It was where all things collided, and it was just magical. It was a magical time in my life. And then the show premiered, and the show did okay. It didn't do great, but it didn't do awful either. So then there was this period of lag time where Bravo took over a year to even respond and say what they were going to even do with the show. So I felt like for a year I was just in limbo.
Limbo, yeah.
In limbo, just fearful and frustrated and happy and sad, and what do I do and what do I say? And I was inundated with people wanting to be on season two and wanting to be on the next run, and I just felt like, what do I even say? I didn't even know how to respond to people. And then the third phase of that is I finally get the call and say, okay, it's not coming back, but not because Bravo called and said, Diane, it's not coming back, just because my contract expired. And I'm like, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
So not only are you not picking up the show, but you didn't even like me enough to call me and tell me. Okay. That's cool. You know, that's cool. And then, so, you know, when my contract expired, it felt like the moment when you feel like the wind has been knocked out of you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it is for nothing, and it just, nothing is kind of more devastating. You really do hit that.
Yes, it's disappointing. It's devastating. It's all these things. So what do I do? That's when I go through my period of my own depression, because now I'm eating irresponsibly. I'm enjoying too much champagne. And just the thought of starting over this journey on television, starting over, is just, it's almost paralyzing because it's so distraught.
Daunting, and you just feel like, oh, my God, do I want to go through that again?
I don't want to go through the disappointment again. People like me on TV, but they don't really get me. You know, I've worked in the reality space, but I'm not a mean girl. I don't want to fight on TV. And because of that, I know I'm not going to have the ratings that all the mean girls get. And what do I do? And what do I do with my brand? And am I even supposed to be doing this? So you question everything about you. And I certainly did, you know, going through that time. And then after a while, and probably after gaining back the 20 pounds I lost before I shot to Rome for Love, I was like, okay, so it's time for me to just pick myself up. You have moped, you have cried long enough. It's time to pick yourself back up. And guess what? You have to start over.
Mm-hmm.
That is just the hard reality.
I know this is so hard, and it's hard to even share. And thank you so much, because, my God, I have been through that more times than I can count. And I have been at the place where I'm like, am I just too tired to get up this time?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And honestly, you and I had a very honest conversation about this the last time we met, because I was really going through it. It was about a year and a half into my business, and everything was hard, and it was financially hard, and it was the most stress I've ever been in my whole life, and I really didn't know if I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you being able to be honest about how hard it was, what you were going through, helped me so much to be like, I'm going to be okay. You know, I don't know how this is all going to pan out, but I'm going to be okay. And I'm so glad that you're sharing that we do question ourselves. Even when we've had the ultimate success that we were going after, we can still succumb to those doubts and those questions and all of that. But then we get up.
Yes.
Then we get up. So when you realize, okay, girl, it's time to, you know, let's go.
Put the fork down.
Yeah, exactly. But let's go for a run real quick. Are you then thinking, like, what is my, you know, what's my next move? Do I totally pivot in a different industry? Do I find a new passion? Because I always feel like when you start out, nothing feels as passionate as whatever you just went through.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people then don't do anything because they're like, well, I don't feel it.
Yeah.
Of course you don't feel as passionate because you haven't spent as much blood, sweat, and tears on it, you know? You haven't dreamed about it long enough.
Yeah.
So how did you find kind of that next thing to then begin to kind of slowly build passion back up?
Well, you know, I practice the same lessons that I try to teach my clients, right? So when things are not in alignment in my life, and when I say they're not in alignment, it means that I'm not happy. I'm not doing what I love. Things are off. Something is not working. So when things are not in alignment in my life, I look in the mirror. That's where I start. Because if it's to be, then it's up to me. And I'm only in this situation I'm in because I've created it. And the reason I say that I've created it is because, hear me out when I say, I truly believe that I am a powerful woman. And I believe that I can have any life that I say I want to have. And so if I'm not having and I'm not experiencing the life that I say that I want and I can have, and I do believe that I am so powerful that I can create it, that means that that same power has not created it.
Yes.
So I don't give anybody else that much power over my life. I accept full responsibility for what I've created and even for what I maybe have destroyed. So my first question is always look in the mirror. And I start figuring out what are the life lessons. And coming out of To Roam for Love, what are the lessons for me coming out of that? One, the Bible says that all things come to pass. All things come to pass. That means that nothing lasts forever.
Mm-hmm.
That means nothing is going to last forever. So I have to make sure that I'm always prepared for the coming and the passing. Because it's always going to happen, no matter where I'm at it, no matter what the life cycle is in life, there will be a coming and a passing. So always be prepared for that. Two, ask yourself, did I really believe that I deserve to be in this state of euphoria? I know I was in it, but did I really believe I was supposed to be there? Or was I really thinking this is too good to be true? It can't be real.
Ooh.
It cannot be real.
Oh, you just hit a nail on the head.
Right.
Yes.
So I have to accept the fact that there was a part of me that felt like this was too good to be true because nobody gets everything they want. And I had everything I wanted. So
you just hit it.
So the conversations that were swirling around in my head saying, there's no way this is real. There's no way this is going to last because it's just too good to be true. Well, guess what? I created that reality of it not happening again.
Manifested the self-fulfilling
prophecy. I manifested all of my own biggest fears. Now, see, when you stop and when I stop and look in the mirror and when I have that tough conversation I had with myself, you know, a couple of years ago, and I realized what some of my own shortcomings was, it was really powerful for me because at the same time as recognizing, that is what gives me the power to start over.
I just want to, like, put everything on slow motion that you just said because there's so much gold in that, and I think it is really hard for us to look in the mirror, right? No
yes.
one wants to. No one
yes.
wants to say, yeah, maybe I had a hand in that. Maybe I created a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's much easier to say, damn it, they didn't do this. Like,
yes.
It's their fault. You know, that's where a lot of people want to put it. And I think there is so much power at looking at our own, like analyzing our own past, our own
yep.
behaviors. And I'm always going to the thoughts because that to me is kind of the place that generates everything.
Yep.
And I've done exactly this. I mean, it's like you were speaking to my soul. I've done exactly what you did in multiple times when I've had huge successes. I've manifested them imploding in like a matter of months.
Yeah,
I was real good at it. I was so fast. I was like, boom! I think it's too good to be true. Boom! There you go.
Yeah,
you know. And the last time that it happened, probably about a year and a half ago, was when I was like, okay. You really need to sit down and do a postmortem on this.
Mm-hmm.
And then from now on, you have to force yourself to change your thoughts and to not allow those. And I think some of it comes from, am I worthy of this? You know, especially the first couple rounds of success.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of women especially kind of deal with that, even if they don't know it kind of consciously.
Mm-hmm.
And mine definitely was like you said, do I deserve to be here? How do I deserve to have everything I want? That
yep.
type of thing. But then I had to really realize, like, okay, those thoughts destroyed my success last time. I am going to be the most diligent person in the world to say, I love this. So every day, literally, I have a motto where I wake up and it's like, I love my life. I mm-hmm. love this. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. I deserve this, you know. And over time, you can really step into believing that in such a powerful way.
Yeah.
So as you started your next thing, is that kind of, did you put some of that energy into, you know, creating the next thing in a way that is really owning it, like, and kind of addressing some of those thoughts from before?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I definitely did. You know, the third biggest lesson coming out of To Roam for Love, I said, I'm not doing anything else where somebody else has so much control.
Yeah.
I don't really want that.
Huge.
It cannot be a dream job if somebody else has the control not only to cancel the show, but not even care enough about me to pick up the phone and call me and let
yep.
me know it's been canceled. So my contribution was so minute in that situation. I said, this won't happen again. So
it's huge.
Part of me starting over was saying, I need to establish more businesses that do not require me every day to operate so that I can play in television. And I believe I will be back, and I believe I will be incredibly successful in television. But when I'm back in television, I know that I'm going to have so many other streams of income that do not include me, that no network and no network and no production company and no fan base is going to have that kind of control of whether or not I sink or swim in television.
That's so huge. So that kind of segues into what you're doing now.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about Glow and Flow Beauty, because that is recently launched, right? Your
yeah.
business venture. So tell us how that came about.
Very recently. So in July of last year, I bought an extension studio, a hair extension studio, and I kind of evolved it into a full-service beauty experience. So a place where women can go and have hair extensions done, color, nails, eyebrow, waxing, eyelash extensions, basically all of their beauty needs in one location in a luxury environment. And we sell, you know, we sell hair, we sell products, we sell beauty supplies, and then we also have a number of extensionists that are truly probably the best in all of L.A. because it's all they do every day. All they do is do hair extensions. All they do is eyelash extensions. So they're truly experts. It's not a hair salon where people kind of come in and you get everything you need from the same person, right? But we have extensionists. We have a color specialist. We have somebody who's a precision cutter. And so you're able to come in and be serviced by all of these experts. So that was one business. And then that was in July. And then in November of last year, we bought a second location, which is Glow and Flow Beauty Supplies. And this one is not a service-based business, but it's a retail location. And so we sell beauty supplies and hair and body and nails and cosmetics and all of the things you would find in a beauty supply. And so that is, you know, that is up and running. And then recently, with the outbreak of COVID-19, my business partner, before it turned into the mess that it is, before it even was called a pandemic, you know, all of the suppliers, the predominantly the suppliers of all beauty products, all come out of China and Korea. And so my
yeah.
business partner was picking up an order, you know, a wholesale order just to restock the store, and he saw some masks. He saw these masks, and he was like, what are these? You know, and they were KN95s. And, you know, at the time, you know, we didn't know this thing was going to be as big as it was, but he bought them. So he bought them, and we had them just in the store, and he just bought a few hundred and had them in the store. And then a local newspaper in the city, you know, where the beauty supply is, they picked up the note. They saw that we had them. They did a story that we had these masks, And then NBC saw that, and then NBC came out and did a story. And then KTLA saw that, KTLA did a story. And then the Associated Press picked up the story from NBC, and it kind of went viral. And this was before it even became, it was called a pandemic. And so
wow.
Now, you know, a couple of months later, our beauty supply is able to remain open during this pandemic
wow.
because we've been able to demonstrate that we have emergency essentials. And, you know, when we bought them, because our beauty supply is in an urban neighborhood. And so we often think, like, you know, communities of color tend to be the last ones to get resources
mm-hmm.
in a time of, you know, tragedy and trauma and all of that. And so we wanted to make sure that they were available for the community that we serve. And once this thing went viral, we were getting people that were coming as far north as Calabasas and as far south as, like, San Diego and Riverside. And people are still calling, asking if we can ship them masks, ship them gloves, ship them disinfectant and sanitizers, because we had no idea there was such a shortage
yeah.
of this stuff all over the country. And we've adopted, you know, we've adopted a hospital in Los Angeles, and many of our customers donate to this hospital, and then we match everything that our customers purchase.
That is so incredible, and that just shows you how the universe, God, has your back.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, because, like you said, who would have known at that moment when he kind of made that decision to get those, and it turns out being a thing that is really helping your new business that had just started, you know, which could have been such a devastating thing 6 months after doors open to go through something like this. And when you're following your passion, your love, your
mm-hmm.
intuition, having that rewarded. So I know what you're telling yourself through all of this is, I am worthy. I am deserving. This is lasting. It's growing, right?
Right.
And it has. It's just been blowing up, which is just incredible. And thank you for doing that work. And thank you for being so open and honest today with sharing your wisdom and your story, because it spoke to me. So I know it's going to speak to so many women in particular. I just adore you, and I want everyone to go follow you on Insta, Diane Valentine. I'm going to put your handle and links in the notes, but what else do you want everybody to know? They need to grab your book, first of all. So if you need a man,
yes.
grab that. I'll put the link in the bio for that too. But yeah, how else can we help, Diane? How else can we help further your mission, your dreams, be there to support you?
Really, just like you said, there's a book called Going the Distance for Love. You can find it on DianeValentine.com. If you are in L.A. looking for beauty, you know, follow us at Glow and Flow Beauty. Pay us a visit. And most importantly is if you are feeling like I was feeling a couple of months ago, that this thing was getting out of hand and I didn't know how to help. I felt like I didn't have enough money, I didn't have enough resources, I didn't have enough power to make a difference. And then I realized that I did. So I've just been encouraging people, if you buy some emergency supplies, buy one more for someone else that you don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I
whether you're in LA or you're in Portland or you're in San Francisco or you're in New York, that we all can make a difference. And it feels good to do good. So do something good for somebody else.
I love it. Thank you so much. And everybody go hustle and thrive. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you, honey. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. And remember, if you got value from today's show, please spread the love by clicking subscribe, leaving a stellar review, and telling everyone you know. And join us next time on The Sarah Centrella Show.